I told the preacher earlier that if I start shaking, it's because I'm trying to control myself. But anyway, we appreciate so much the invitation to be in your missions conference. We're on our, I think it's 7th furlough, and traveling around to churches and reporting and telling folks what's been happening in Costa Rica. And it's been our joy to be here for a few days and to be cared for and to be loved. And we appreciate you folks in that. I do want to say this. We've been able to let our hair down a little bit here. See, sometimes we go to churches and you have to be stuffed shirt all the time because that's what they expect. And Brother Herschel and Brother Ziner, we've all been able to let our hair down. They've let their hair down a lot farther than I have, you'll notice. but it's an exciting thing to be here. I want to get straight in. Preacher, I was not told what time to be finished. I'm sorry. 10 till 11. Is that the finish bell? Okay, alrighty. It's not from Norway, it's from Finland. It's the finish bell. Okay. This is exciting. You don't understand how important this meeting is. Do you realize that there are people, men, that have taken their families around the world based on meetings just like this? It's important. This is more important than some of you know. And anyway, I want to share some things with you. This morning, let me mention something that happened in our nation's history. In the autumn of 1952, in the Western Pacific Ocean, an island disappeared. It was called Ilulissat, if I'm pronouncing it right, I'm not sure. It was when our government, our military, and our scientists got together and they came up with the concoction to make the first hydrogen bomb. It was the most powerful weapon on Earth at that particular time. We have more powerful weapons yet. But it left a hole in the ocean, 60 meters deep. An island completely disappeared because people who knew were able to harness the power and the potential of hydrogen. Simply. That's what we're trying to encourage you folks to do. Not hydrogen, but faith. We're trying to encourage you to see how you can harness your faith. Much like scientists can separate water into oxygen, which is flammable, hydrogen, which is explosive. You mix the two together, you can put fire out with it. Makes no sense. Our faith is the same. It's something that can be harnessed, and you have to learn how to manipulate it. You have to learn how to use it and learn how to watch it grow within you. And it's the way we do it is to practice faith. And we see tremendous things as we try to harness our faith. We see tremendous examples in the Bible. We won't go there. As you turn to 2 Corinthians chapter 8, I'll remind us what is in Hebrews chapter 11. In Hebrews chapter 11, we have a list of people from the Old Testament who put their faith in action, who learned how to harness their faith, who learned how to put it to work in their lives and did some great things. I could mention a number. I could mention Moses. You know the story, and you've seen the little movies on TV about it, which are not always true. But you've seen where Moses took the Israelites out of, if you will, the slaves out of Egypt, and they crossed the Red Sea. And each one of those, they say there were 2 to 3 million of them. I don't know, and it doesn't really make a difference how many there were. But you realize that each of the people who followed Moses across the Red Sea, they each had different levels of faith. Moses, obviously the leader, if you will, he must have had tremendous faith. Can you imagine him walking up to the Red Sea, followed by all these people, trusting God that he would open and part the Red Sea so that they could go across, the Bible says, on dry land? Can you imagine the faith that Moses put to practice when he stepped out and saw that Red Sea open? And then other folks following him who didn't have as much faith, but they had faith because they followed him and went between the tremendous walls of water. I can imagine the fish looking out, looking down, oh, we're going to eat Jews this afternoon. You know, can you imagine all this stuff? But imagine, now here's what I want you to see. People with different levels of faith all accomplishing something together. And they escaped from Egypt. Now, not all of them had the faith of Moses. But they were gradually learning, each of them, how to trust in the Lord and different things of that nature. Then we can obviously go to Abraham. He raised the knife above his son. You know the story. And God miraculously provided the ram for the sacrifice. A man whose faith is recounted in Hebrews chapter 11. In Hebrews chapter 11, we also learn of other folks. I'll mention, because I notice a lot of young people here today. Young people, they're special people, and you know, I'm a Sunday school kid, so that means a lot to me that the Sunday school kids are here. And thank you, teachers, for bringing those that are in here that are with permission, I should say. Some probably skipped their Sunday school classes, but it's a joy to have them here. I'll mention David. You'll remember the story how he picked up 5 smooth stones from the brook. You know the story, and he challenged the giant and actually beat him, and he slung. How's it? I don't know how they say that. I've forgotten how to. He slung that one stone at the giant, and the giant obviously fell. Imagine the faith of David when he was swinging that sling around. But let me mention something else. You got to understand something. David's faith had been tried. You remember the story of the bear. David's faith had been tried. He'd put it to practice. He learned how to harness his faith. And we can read on more and more and more about the life of David, and we find that David's faith became even greater. He was known as the friend of God. David, obviously, we know the stories. David did some stupid things, as we all do. But God used his faith in a tremendous way to bless God's own people. Now, let me mention 2 people surrounding David, surrounding David that's important in this story. Can you imagine, I mention this for you parents. Can you imagine how many times David's dad said, David, I said, put down that sling and go take care of those sheep. Because you know how boys are. I hope that you do, because we are all big boys, the guys that are here. There's something about slings, and there's something about knives, there's something about throwing rocks, there's something about stuff that way. But can you imagine how many times David's dad had to admonish him, saying, go do your job, put the sling down. But at the same time, listen to me, with a lot of patience, his dad allowed him to practice with that sling, which is what God used to destroy the giant. So be very cautious with your children. Let me mention this as well. I believe this, the greatest ministry going on in this church at this hour is downstairs. I'm the product of a Sunday school. Sunday school teachers are my heroes. They practice tremendous faith. Have you ever thought about the faith? You, those of you that have children, do you realize the faith that your Sunday school, the teachers of your children are placing into action? They're investing in the lives of your children, and they may never see the results. You talk about faith. That's blind faith. That's the faith that of people who would someday, much like my Sunday school teachers, would say, well, what do you know? That Ronnie Todd, look how he turned out. And that God's not done turning me yet. But let me tell you something. Be cautious with your Sunday school teachers. Pray for them. Pray for them in a fabulous way, because God uses their faith, and their faith is being invested in your young people. I wanted to encourage you with that. Sunday school teachers, obviously, are my heroes. We're in mission conference time, and this is critically important. I want you to understand several things. The mission conference is not a time when we determine if we should give. No. 2 Corinthians chapter 16, which was mentioned last night, if I'm not mistaken, tells us we need to give. It's each of our responsibility to give towards getting the gospel around the world. So we're not here to determine if we should give. We're not here to determine if I should increase in my giving. Our faith should increase constantly, because we should be growing with the Lord. And if you've not seen God do some interesting things with your faith promise this past year as you have given it, something sounds a little bit interesting. It may be that you need to focus a little more on what God's doing. At the same time, a mission conference is not an optional thing. Preacher, this sounds strange, but we do these things on purpose. Do you realize that your pastor, in our church in Bethel Baptist in West Carrollton, the missions conference is the best attended and the most exciting time in our church's year on the whole calendar. And it's planned well in advance. Why? Because this is a planned event. This is something we desire to do. This is something we plan to do. And we hope that you've been praying about this for a long time. Your faith promise card represents a tremendously important thing that we'll talk about next hour. And we hope that you've been praying along that line. A mission conference also is not a time to determine where you'll get the money to give. No, we know in 2 Corinthians chapter... That comes from God. Essentially, what we're doing is we're placing our faith in God and allowing Him to help us get this gospel around the world, essentially letting Him pay for that. 2 Corinthians obviously tells us some tremendous things. In a mission conference also is not a time to determine if we should trust God. It's amazing how sometimes we can trust God for our sins. We can place our sin load upon the shoulders of our Lord Jesus Christ and feel comfortable doing so, but then we can't trust Him for a few bucks. And we can't trust Him like that. But we have to understand that He is a trusting God and He will take care of us. But see, those are the, if I can say it this way, those are the negative things. The things that a mission conference is not. But there are also things that a mission conference is. You see, this time set aside for your church to determine the missions budget for the next fiscal missions year, this is tremendously important. And it is a time when this church will determine how far you're going to go with the gospel as a church, as a corporate entity. And this is tremendously important. It's a time also when you'll determine your attendance to the Lord's command. He's left us here for a purpose, to get the gospel around the world, and we have to be attentive to that. And then it's also a personal time. And we've not mentioned this a whole lot. In the song that we quoted last night, and we adapted a little bit, we touched on it just a bit, but we've not talked about personal commitment. Each one of us has to, essentially, think with me for just a second. We see Peter doing some crazy things, and Brother Herschel, sometimes this sounds kind of odd, but I've always looked at you as like a Paul, and I like Paul. I enjoy studying his life, but I don't like Peter. I'm sorry, Peter rubs me the wrong way. I see things in Peter's life that bother me, and Edie was telling me one day. She said, "You may tell you why it is you don't like Peter." She said, "Because you're too much like him." You remember Peter? Peter's the one who, when they came to arrest Jesus, he pulled out the sword and cut the guy's ear off. Remember the story? I'd have gone for the Adam's apple. That's me. You remember the roosters? You know, the roosters crowing, you know, the three times and all that stuff. That's me. Scares me. That's why I don't like Peter. The old turkey. But I want to share something with you. You've got to understand that we're all here for a purpose. And this is we speak corporately. We speak about the church and our church giving so much money to missions and all that. But it's done on an individual basis. It's done on you. Just like Peter. God working in Peter's life. Because, you see, when we see Peter doing these dumb things, Peter wasn't who he was going to become yet. Just like the Sunday school kids downstairs, be cautious, be patient with them. They are not who they're going to be yet. Yet. And so some of you are thinking, yeah, but I don't give that much. No, but just get involved. Get involved. If you start little, that's fine. We all started little. And then you let your faith grow. You learn how to harness your faith, just like those scientists harnessed hydrogen and did tremendous things. This is when we put God into the mix. This is when we decide that He can do what we cannot do ourselves. Obviously, it's important that we do that. In Hebrews chapter 12, we notice that Jesus obviously is the author and finisher of our faith. Brother Herschel is a concrete guy. I've watched him work concrete, does amazing things with concrete. I remember my maternal grandfather was a concrete man. He came and put my dad's garage in, and it was a concrete floor, obviously. He had a crew of black guys that came, and they used a big power trowel. This was a long time ago. A big power trowel scared the fire out of me. And it's amazing how they did that. And they were finishing the concrete, preparing it for use. Preparing it for what it was supposed to be meant for. And that's what Jesus does. I believe this. I believe Jesus essentially gives us the faith to get saved. And then He polishes that little bit of faith that we have. Because it doesn't, you know what? It doesn't take much faith to get saved. It really doesn't. Much less in the life of a little 11-year-old boy like me. I'd never robbed banks like some of you. I'd never killed people like... No, I'm just saying that. But I'd never... I mean, wickedness, you know, I was just a kid. And it was a piece of cake, and essentially for me to get saved. Some of you, I know, with your... Maybe some things in your lives were a little more complicated, and it took a little more faith. But you see, that salvation faith has to grow. It has to be harnessed. It has to be polished. And Jesus will polish your faith if you'll allow Him to. And I hope that you do. I hope that you'll look at it that way. We always go, it seems like, to Paul for direction. We go to Paul for direction in the church because the teachings that we have about the local church and our responsibilities, a lot of these things are taught to us by Paul. He's written the vast majority of the epistles, the small books that we have in our Bible that tell us these things. Tell us what a pastor is supposed to be, how a pastor is supposed to treat us, how we're supposed to treat our pastor. All these things are dealt with by the Apostle Paul. He also gives us some tremendous instruction about how we can harness our faith and put it to work and allow God to use us to do tremendous things like Moses crossing the Red Sea, like David throwing a stone which killed the giant, which was a tremendous tempter for the people of Israel at that time, and all these different people. And we see that we can go to Paul, and we'll go to 2 Corinthians chapter 8 and gather some things. Now, let me share something with you. You have to understand that I've always had interesting jobs. This is my work life before. Before I went to Midwestern Baptist College, and even during that time, I was an inspector. In, you know, we had guys that worked in the factory that lived in the dorm and worked in were students at Midwestern Baptist College at this time. But some of those guys worked like dogs in the factory on these machines and forming oil and all kind of stuff, and they smelled like oil when they got off work. I had a piece of cake job. I was a final inspector. I just inspected these parts, made sure that everything worked right, make sure that certain things were within their dimensions. And I was one of the guys that would go. We had this in our department, which was probably every bit as big as this room, probably perhaps even larger. We had a small trailer that was air conditioned that was inside, and you go in this trailer, and that's where we watched all the biggest boxing matches that were ever, you know, back with Muhammad Ali and all those fights. They were on TV back then, remember, before they had to put them all on cable. And we watched all those, making union wages during that time. We watched all the fights. But anyway, we would go into this little thing, and they had mountains. I mean, bunches of file cabinets. And these file cabinets had blueprints in them. And they were all numbered. Each part had a number. And we would go in. I could go in and I could pull a blueprint on any part that our company made. Every one of them was there. And I could go to a place and I knew that I could go there. And I could count on the fact that on this blueprint, the bend in this particular pipe, what we did was we made the gas necks where you put your gasoline into the car that goes to the tank. That's what we built for everybody. Even Checker Motor Cab we built them for. And I knew that I could go there and determine, and I could see on the blueprint what the curve was supposed to be, the angle of the curve, and how big the ripple at the end was so that it could go into the tank. See that there was a tolerance there. It could be 3 or 4 thousandths bigger or 3 or 4 thousandths smaller. And if it was bigger or smaller, it was junk. We had to throw it away. Well, we can go to Paul and find a blueprint for how we can manipulate, if you want to use the word, how you can harness your faith. Paul gives us tremendous examples, and he's teaching the folks in Corinth about faith and how you can manipulate it. Now, there's something I want you to understand. Your pastor's taught this many times before. You understand there were two letters of Paul to the Corinthian church. The first one was a tough letter. Paul essentially, inspired obviously by the Holy Spirit of God, he had to kind of slap them down a bit. Because there was wickedness in the church in Corinth. You think, wickedness in the church? Oh yeah, we have problems in the church. Churches are not without problems. But Paul noted, listen, and he'd spent some time, a lot of time there, and he noted this stuff in the church, and he wrote them a letter and said, listen, you've got to get this taken care of. And then he noted they did. They got this stuff taken care of. The sins that were in the church and in the lives of the people, essentially, if I can say it this way, they'd gotten themselves cleaner and meaner. And then you'll notice Paul was able to write a second letter, inspired obviously by the Holy Ghost. And Paul wrote them a second letter, and the texture of the second letter is totally different. Why? Because he's not having to deal with the sin that he had to deal with in the first. And there were other teachings as well. But he's noticing, listen, because you're cleaner and meaner, I can teach you to other things. I can essentially take you to another level. I can help you learn how to manipulate that little faith you had and that you were abusing in 1 Corinthians, my letter to you in the first letter. But in the second letter, now see, I can tell you greater things. I can tell you about how you can harness that faith. And he uses examples here. He uses some tremendous things. Paul is a fabulous character. L. Herschel, he's just like him. Now watch, 2 Corinthians chapter 8. We're going to do something, because this is the Sunday school hour. Brother Ziner will be preaching in just a few minutes, so it'll be more a formal type thing. We're in the Sunday school hour, so let's just pass down through here. And I want to stop and make some comments as we go through. We'll just read, and then we'll gather some things and get some information from, if you will, the blueprint. It's like we've gone up to the file cabinet in the inspection department. We're pulling the blueprint on two things. We're pulling the blueprint on your faith. Now, you notice I didn't say my faith. I probably should have. I should have said our faith. We're pulling the blueprint on our faith, and essentially we're pulling the blueprint on the Great Commission and how this can be done. This is what we're seeing in action. Now watch, we're going to read, gander down through here. We'll go as far as time allows. 2 Corinthians chapter 8. Moreover, brethren, we do you to wit of the grace of God bestowed on the churches of Macedonia, how that in a great trial of affliction, the abundance of their joy and their deep poverty abounded unto the riches of their liberality. And he says this, for to their power I bear record, yea, and beyond their power they were willing of themselves. Here we'll pause for a second. There's critical things we're noticing on this blueprint. There's some critical things. Back in the factory in Detroit where I worked, the raw material was critical. We had to test the tensile strength of steel to make sure it would bend a certain way. And no more and no less. We had to test the strength of the piping that we built. I was an inspector of what was called a Yoder mill. It was where they would bring... You've seen these huge... Probably in this area of the country you don't have much, but huge rolls of steel. You'll see a truck over in the Detroit area and between Chicago and Detroit up in northern Indiana. You'll see these huge... a huge semi-truck. And he's got one or two rolls on it. It looked like huge rolls of toilet paper. They're rolls of steel. Those things weigh 40 tons. Huge rolls of steel, and they unwind. We get them in the factory, lift them up with a huge crane, and we would unroll them just like a roll of toilet paper, run them through a slitter and make them different widths, and then we'd put them in a Yoder mill and turn that steel around into a circle, if you will, as it was going. It'd go in flat. We'd gradually move it around, and then we'd weld it, and we'd have to check those welds. Every once in a while, you had to cut off a piece of steel, and it was just for me, the inspector. And I would check it. What I would do is I would make that weld break. I'd push it to its limit. And that limit had to be a certain amount. If it was more or less, there were some problems. It could get brittle. But anyway, what we're doing is we're checking our limits. We're looking at what we've got here. Watch what it says. For to their power I bear record, and yea, beyond their power. Now, the problem is this. The first, you'll notice they had to be willing. If you are not willing to participate in what God has left us here for, there's not much we can do. Thank God you folks are willing. You've proven yourselves over 35 years to be willing. And you're growing in your willingness. There will be people here present this morning who as yet you are not willing. This may be new to you. You may be new. I don't know a lot of you folks. I've seen, Q, I know you and I, we're philosophically alike. Okay, but there are some folks here I've never seen you in my life. You may think this is the freakiest thing I've ever heard in my entire stinking life. But I want to tell you something. First of all, you have to be willing to participate. If you're a believer in Jesus Christ, you are here with a purpose. There's a reason why God didn't take you straight to heaven. Sometimes I wish it had been a lot easier. When Jack Cox led me to the Lord as an 11-year-old kid, it had been a whole lot easier if God had just taken me right to heaven. Don't you think? Oh, you think, yeah, listening to you. Yeah, I wish God had taken you right up there then. What I want you to see is this. We are here for a purpose. And we have to maintain ourselves within that purpose and focus on that purpose. And everything we do in our lives, whether it is study, whether it is work, whether it is raising our children or rearing our children, raising our family, whatever it is, we've got to maintain ourselves within that purpose. That purpose is to get the gospel around the world that includes your next door neighbor. The problem is this. You've got to be willing, first of all. And if you're not willing, I'm sorry, but there's not much we can do. The willingness comes from you. Now, I'm not saying you have to be willing to give tremendous amounts of money. No, I'm saying participate at whatever level your faith is at this time. And then we'll teach you how to harness that faith. We'll teach you how to put that to work and how to use it. And that's what we're learning here from Paul. You first have to be willing, and then they had to learn how to harness that power. And you'll notice in verse 3 that power is bigger than them. This is where it can be done. Now listen to me. We missionaries, sometimes we present this as a task that cannot be accomplished. Getting 7 billion people, or getting the gospel to 7 billion people, it is bigger than any of us. It is bigger than your church. It's bigger than what your pastor can accomplish and all the missionaries that he can accumulate. But it can be done. This can be done. But we have to harness the power of God, if I can say it this way. And the way to put the power of God at work, the richness, if you will, the wealth of God at work, is through our faith. Then we go to verse 4. Praying us with much entreaty that we'd receive the gift and take upon us the fellowship of the ministering to the saints. Let me mention something. I've heard this preached a number of different ways. And you've got to understand that this offering we're talking about here, just so you're, because there are some people here. I'd like to think, Brother Ziner, that I'm not stupid. That's hard to imagine for some of you. But for a long time, I heard this stuff preached. This is not a faith promise missions offering being talked about here. What Paul is talking about is an offering given by faith. It's the principle we're talking about, giving by faith. This is an offering for the saints in Jerusalem. They're suffering a horrible famine. But the principles of giving by faith for the cause of missions, we can gather here as well. Now watch this, verse 5. And this they did, not as we had hoped, but first gave their own selves to the Lord and unto us by the will of God. Insomuch that we desired Titus that as he had begun, so he would also finish in you the same grace. Therefore, as ye abound in everything, and this God's desire that we live abundant lives, he says, in faith, and utterance, and knowledge, and in all diligence, and in your love to us, see that ye abound in this grace also, this grace of giving to the need. In this case, in the case of the second book of Corinth, we're talking about giving to the necessity of the church in Jerusalem. In our case, in the purpose and the cause of this mission conference, we're talking about giving to the cause of getting the gospel around the world, our purpose for being here. Then watch what he says in verse 8. In verse 8, he says this, I speak not by commandment, but by occasion of the forwardness of others, and to prove the sincerity of your love. Here's what you've got. This gift, what we're talking about, this giving to the cause of missions for your church collectively getting together and decide, what are we going to do this next fiscal year for the cause of missions? This is nothing but the proof of your love. I liken it almost to engagement rings. This is the guy right here with the gray sweater on. You're not married, are you? No. Do you have a fiancé? Let me tell you something. I'm going to give you a warning. And each one of there's a lot of guys here that would say the same thing. There's going to come a time when you're going to be Twitter-pated. Some girl is going to come into your life, and you're going to be so Twitter-pated. Yeah, you've probably never heard of that term. It's one of those Disney-type things. But anyway, you're going to be so Twitter-pated that you're going to go out and spend an immense amount of money to buy a little piece of rock. They're called diamonds. And it's going to be, in her eyes, the proof of the sincerity of your love. That's what we're talking about. How much do you love the Lord? And how much do you love the purpose that you're here for? You got to understand, He's doing something in your life, whether you want Him to or not. You can hinder that. You know, we can take our faith and put a governor on it. We can take our faith and put a hindrance on it. Someday that's coming along. You need to start planning on that, because those times come. The proof of the sincerity of their love was what they were getting involved in here and letting their faith grow. Now watch verse 9. For you know the grace of our Lord Jesus Christ, that though he was rich, yet for your sakes he became poor, that ye through his poverty might be rich. Now let me touch on something here. Where is Jesus today? He's at the right hand of the Father. Okay, now listen. This is not a con job that Paul is presenting here. But there's something here that I want you to see. Jesus left, and we preach about this when we talk about, especially with the coming of the Lord, Christmas time and stuff. Jesus left the riches of heaven and to come to be born a man, to live in poverty, if you will, the father or the son, I should say, of a poor carpenter. He left the riches of heaven to die for us. Let me tell you something. The riches of heaven that Jesus left were only apparent. I should say this. Let me redo that. The poverty that Jesus suffered for those 33 years was only apparent. Where is he now? He's got the same riches that he had before. That's the same. There's a principle here. Follow me. I'm pulling this right off the blueprint. Paul's blueprint. Listen. The principle is this. Jesus became poor for us for a time so that what? He could accomplish his purpose. Now he's back into the richie again. See what I'm saying? Now follow my thought. Oh, so you're going to give, let's throw a round number out. So you're going to give $50 a week to missions? And your family, your own family will say, what, Dad, are you nuts? You're going to take on this level of poverty? Let me tell you something. The poverty you take on by participating in this at faith, if you're doing it by sacrifice, you're on your own. We talked about that the other night. If you do this by sacrificing to give something, you're on your own. That's not God. That's you. We're talking about in the level of faith. If you do this by faith, the poverty that you assume by giving, it's only apparent. And it's temporary only until what happens? Until you end up there with Jesus at the right hand again. Till God resupplies, and you'll be surprised what happens as your faith grows. That is something I draw here from the blueprint. Look at verse 10. Or really, essentially, in chapter 11, verse 8, we don't have time to go there. Paul presented himself as a robber. I don't know, Brother Herschel, I don't know if you ever thought about this. We need to really warn you. We're here to rob you. And we smile as we do it. But this is not Obamacare. We're not here to rob you like that. Paul said, I robbed you to help other churches. We come, Herschel and I and Brother Zeiner, we come and we're here to rob you. And by the way, let me say this. We are here, just the three of us, we represent all the missionaries you support during this week. Each of them would love to be here. They'd love to share their challenges and tell you about how to pray for them and tell you about their kids and all that stuff. And it's our joy to be here to do that at this time. But we're here for a purpose, and we're here to rob you. Now, you say, we're going to get robbed by you? Yeah, and you know what? I was robbed. Edie and I, we were just robbed the first week of February. That's when our church, we got together, our church over in Dayton, we did this. Yours, I think your First Baptist is in September now. They get robbed in September. You say, missionaries participate in this as well? Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. You know why? Because there's something about getting robbed that's neat. Now, you have to understand, it's a different kind of robbery than what you're thinking. It's like grandpa, when the grandkids come up and say, Grandpa, you got a quarter, of course now it's dollars. You got a $5, Grandpa? You know, grandpas like to get robbed like that. Why? Because it's in your heart. Now, let me say this. There's a heart condition you've got to work on. You get your heart right. You line your thoughts up with what the Lord wants for you. And you be willing, and God will not be finished with your faith. I mean to tell you, this stuff, it's like dynamite, old Carlos Demers used to say in some ways. Chapter 10, or verse 10. And herein I give my advice, for this is expedient for you who have begun before not only to do, but also to be forward a year ago. Now, therefore, perform the doing of it. Something just came to my mind I want to share with you. There was a time, and the preacher and the missionaries understand what I'm saying. There was a time when we changed churches. Let me give you an illustration of how important this is. When we left one church and went to another, I actually told our new pastor, I said, listen, preacher, you have to understand that I will not be participating in the church's missions budget until I fulfill my commitment with the church we just left. That's how important this is. When you make it, you have to understand, listen to me, this is serious. When you make a commitment on the card in the next hour or whenever you do that, when you make that commitment, there are men like us who are taking our children to foreign countries for you. And we would do it without your help, but we're communally, if you can say it this way, we're taking our children to the foreign field based on what you put on that card. So look at this as being very serious. This is very serious. This is a commitment. And you have to perform this. You work on this. Let God do it. And it says, as he continues on, he says this, that as there was a readiness to will, so there may be a performance also out of that which you have. This is not something, you don't go out and buy lottery tickets hoping to win millions so that you can put hundreds of thousands of dollars a week on your faith promise card. That's not what we're talking about. Generally, this is what, as a general rule, now there are times when this isn't true, but as a general rule, what you're going to find out is this is something God's already given you. You already have it. What you have to do is as I think it was Brother Ziner mentioned the word, you have to take inventory. Some of us need to inventory what's in our purse, the billfold if you're a man. Sometimes our monies go to wrong things. Some of us need to inventory what we've got in our garage. Some of us can't even get our cars in our garage for all the junk. What is that? It's just money invested in something we don't even use. Haven't seen it in years. Makes no difference. It's just money that's invested. And what is the purpose of that? It's a waste. And what we need to do is get all those taken care of. But he says, this is something out of that which you have. Then he first says in verse 12, for if there first be a willing mind, it is accepted according that a man hath, and not according to that he hath not. For I mean not that other men be eased and ye burdened, but by an equality, that now at this time your abundance may be a supply for their want, that their abundance also may be a supply for your want, that there may be equality. Now for time's sake, let me go down and show you verse 24. Wherefore show ye to them and before the churches the proof of your love and of your boasting of our boasting on your behalf. You have to understand that I go around and brag on our church. We're pushing, or as a matter of fact, a little over $200,000. The church runs 185. How can that be? That's the budget for our next year. And I don't know where you guys are, and it makes no difference. I don't really, it doesn't make a difference where you guys are. But I use our church as an example. Say, listen, hey, there are churches doing this. Challenge yourself. Their churches are doing great things, but we don't just end there. We have to put our money, obviously, where our mouth is. And verse 21 mentions this. These things have to be honestly handled, and that's where we have to trust our pastor. Preacher, let me make a statement here. Thank you, preacher. I may speak as though I were a member of your church, and I would be proud to be. I am not. But thank you for protecting us. You're protecting us in two realms. You protect us by bringing missionaries in here who are worthy of investment. And then at the same time, you protect the mission's money. Let me tell you something. You want trouble. You want God to be ticked off at your church. You start using mission's money. You give money to missions and it's used for something else. Holy cow. I mean to tell you, God's going to get upset at that. And I've seen that happen before. Look at chapter 9, verse 6. Watch what we find here. But this I say, he which soweth sparingly shall reap also sparingly. We heard this the other night. And he which soweth bountifully shall reap also bountifully. Every man according as he purposeth in his heart, so let him give, not grudgingly or of necessity, for God loveth a cheerful giver. And God is able to make all grace abound toward you, that ye always having all sufficiency in all things may abound to every good work. You see, this sufficiency, the provision that we need to be who we're supposed to be, comes from God. Let me share a thought with you. It may be the last. We should hear a buzzer in just a minute. I believe I can speak, your pastor would back me up on this. If you don't tithe, don't do this. Listen, I'll say it again. If you, in your, I don't know you folks from the man in the moon, like I said, if you do not tithe, please don't do this. And let me tell you why. Malachi presents that as robbing God, because God owns everything that you have anyway. And we give God 10% of what we have. That's what's called a tithe. And that's normal. And here's the thing. Sometimes we say, and it's really not right, we say we give our tithes. No, we're supposed to pay our tithes. It'd be like this. Oh, Ed Bragg, Edie's twin brother, he said this one time, blew me away. I never heard it said this way. He said, imagine, Pastor, if you had a fifth wheel camper. And I would come by and I'd say, Pastor, can I borrow your fifth wheel camper? I need to borrow it for 10 days to make a little quick trip. And I would like, to, I would hope that you would have enough confidence in me to say, yeah. Because I was raised different. You know, I was raised when I bring the truck back, it's full, it's clean, you know, the camper's clean, all that kind of stuff. But anyway, can you imagine I borrow your pastor's camper for 10 days, and then I pull into the driveway, back the camper in nice, like my dad taught me how to do, set it right where it's supposed to be, and then I knock on the preacher's door and I'd say, Preacher, I've got a camper out here that I want to give you. That reaction right there, hear that? That's got to be what God thinks and God, how God reacts when we say we're going to give our tithes. You're going to give me what already belongs to me? Let me ask you, let me follow that up with this thought from the blueprint, I believe. If you're not tithing, you're robbing from God. And then you turn around and give some of that to missions. That's money that we don't want. I don't want stolen money. I want money that comes from God. And that's what we've seen. This stuff will work, and it's a principle that will go. It'll take us down the path to getting the gospel around the world. Look to verse 12 of chapter 10, something I want to hear or show you. For we dare not make ourselves, I'm in 2 Corinthians chapter 10, verse 12. For we dare not make ourselves of the number, or compare ourselves with some that commend themselves. This is like a tongue twister. But they measuring themselves by themselves and comparing themselves among themselves are not wise. But we will not boast of things without our measure, but according to the measure of the rule which God hath distributed to us. A measure to reach even unto you. Listen, we all give at different levels because our faith is different. We're not all the same. Some of us have been through things in our lives that God has used to finish our faith. Maybe you've not been through that yet. Allow Him to do that. But at the same time, we're different people. Watch this. For we stretch not ourselves beyond our measure, as though we reach not unto you. For we are come as far as to you also in preaching the gospel of Christ. Then he says this. Not boasting of things without our measure, that is, of other men's labors, but having hope. This is Paul speaking. He says, but having hope, when your faith is increased, that we shall be enlarged by you according to our rule abundantly. Now listen, how can this gospel, how can this seemingly impossible task be done? You need bigger missionaries than you've got. And we would be the first three to admit that. You need bigger missionaries than you've got. But the way to make we missionaries bigger is to what? What does it say? When your faith is increased. When you increase your faith, it's like God provides the money, but God magnifies the message. How can the gospel get around the world to 7 billion people? It would take a magnifying glass. It would take a bunch of money. And who can provide that? God. Preacher, I'm finished. I didn't hear a bell, and it says 7 minutes till. It's because I'm deaf. Not only that, I'm dumb. Deaf and dumb. Thank you so much. And let me tell you, let me share something. I'm sorry. Enjoy your lives, and enjoy letting Jesus finish your faith, because that's what He wants to do.